Welcome to the HR Power Hour, presented by Career Management Associates. I'm David Chulo. It's about all things in the human resource world. We're going to bring in local, regional, and national guests, and we're going to talk about a variety of topics and explain why human resource management is critical to your business success so that you can make decisions to keep and retain great talent.
Welcome to the HR Power Hour, presented by CMAcareer.com and Verrill-Law.com. I'm your host, Tawny Alvarez from Verrill, and today our guest is Lori Wallace, founder and CEO of Career Ecology, as well as social innovator, working to liberate heart mindfulness within the challenging and often traumatizing job hunt. And today we're talking about mindful interviewing. Welcome, Lori. Thank you so much for being here.
Oh, thank you so much. This is such an intentional moment. I just want to kind of do a shout out to the listeners that you are so kind to meet me in advance, to, you know, kind of hold this conversation. And that's really what mindfulness is all about. So we're already kicking it off that way. So thank you, Tawny.
Well, thank you, Lori. I appreciate that. And you know, as you just mentioned, we thankfully have had the opportunity to talk already. So I have a sense as to the work that you do. And I think that that's always helpful for our listeners to understand, because when they join us in this space, they're always saying, well, why did Tawny choose Lori for this discussion? Like, what is it about Lori that makes it worth my while to sit here for the next hour and listen to Tawny and Lori talk about mindful interviewing? So I would love it if you could give a little bit of background to our listeners about who you are and what brought you kind of through your journey to create Career Ecology.
Yes, thank you. You know, I would say that it all started off really in 2001 through the most dramatic moment of my life that brought me here to you today and all the work I'm doing. So of course, mindfulness and kindness and connection would be at the center. And it was back in 2001, at the end of that year, 9/11 happened. And of course, we all remember that. And I was 8 months pregnant and nearly birthed my child on the living room floor there with many other women. I ended up in the emergency room with so many women and managed to keep my baby in. But what ended up happening and ensuing was, through the birth of my child, a layoff while I had a new baby. I didn't know you could do that, but you probably can legally.
Well, I mean, we sometimes recommend that it's not ideal, and unless it absolutely has to happen, not to do it. Not a great position to find yourself in. But I always love to say that our challenging moments lead us to some of our like best brilliance. So I'm excited for you to share with everyone kind of how this path and journey really like tremendously evolves from that.
You're so right.
Moment.
So right. Because honestly, Tawny, I would not go back and change a thing. But at the moment with my new baby, you know, the huge recession, layoff, my husband had decided to be a stay-at-home dad for a while and he was in between jobs. So we both didn't have jobs. And then I fell into an autoimmune collapse. So it turns out I've been allergic to wheat my whole life, yada, yada. So now I'm so ill that I have to cover my face to go outside because I am so filled with just face sores and swelling. My eyes were swollen shut. It was enormously scary. And really, in one foul swoop, in a couple months, I'm a mom, my body is shifting, I have no job, and we have to sell our home and go live with my parents. I'm 36 years old. And what birthed out of this moment was a new path of self-care. So I started on that path to understand, I need to love and pay attention to myself. I need to lift myself up and understand who I am. And for work, I wanted to practice radical kindness. Now, I just found out yesterday or a couple of days ago, my son turned 22 on November 13th, and it is the Global Kindness Day or something like that. So, you know, who knows if that was what was behind it, but it was really a convergence. And I told my husband and I told the universe, my work is going to be practicing radical kindness. And so zipping forward, I get a call as I'm kind of looking for jobs and prepared to take a significant pay cut or go in a different way. I had been an executive director for a bank with a national campaign on equity lines of credit and a large staff. And here I am now. And I thought, okay, what could it be where people feel like they've got someone who listens and who cares? Then I get a call from my recruiter, and he's recruiting me to some sort of VP of capital, blah, blah, blah role in Seattle. And I told him that I'm switching to practice radical kindness as a career. You know, let me tell you something. When recruiters hear that one of their candidates has gone kind of off, you know, into a whole new sector, it's a little depressing. So
they're like, wait a second, that's not where we were at when that we had our first conversation.
I know. It was funny to hear the disappointment in his voice. But I did go out and moved, went for a travel for a little trip. And long story short, he ends up hiring me to be a recruiter. Almost did not get hired because I scored too high in empathy, but did hire me. I know. Let's just take a moment with
that. Yes. No, I mean, exactly. Make sure that you're harsh enough to be able to do this job.
Exactly. This is sales. These are not human beings that you're holding in your hand who have been laid off and now their marriage may be strained or their health is strained. So much happens in these moments where people feel displaced and very nervous, and maybe they're on the edge too financially. So I came in to practice radical kindness and ultimately change headhunting into human connection. And that just didn't belong there. So I had to quit and start my own agency in 2005. So that's when it started with my own agency to make that shift. And we'll talk more about how that's led to today. But I just wanted to kind of share that nugget that this, all that we'll talk about today and what I bring forward is born out of a shattered moment and a desire for authentic human connection and kindness, which I have certainly experienced has made all the difference for every single person, thousands that I've touched, and their ability to live a happy, productive life.
I mean, I think that that's something our listeners are going to hear a lot over the course of today's episode, that human connection element of everything that you do. I mean, a lot of the work that you do to assist career seekers is navigating the interview process itself. And it's interesting because I always love it when we have people who are kind of looking at the same situation from very different perspectives. And so often the people I work with are really looking at it from a management perspective. This is what we need to do. There's only one way to do it. And your experience kind of on both sides of this, both working with individuals who are going through the interview process, who are accessing it and beginning that process, and then also kind of having worked on the other side with management there. You have some great insight as to what that looks like. And if you were to provide, this is like that. Okay. If you were to provide the top five things that interviewers, so on the management side, that they could do to find a successful candidate, what would those five things be? I mean, I feel like this is early in the show to really come out with one of those like big, massive questions, but I think it plays such a big role in the rest of our conversation that that's why it's doing it. And I know we have a bunch of listeners who are like, whoa, Tani, usually you start with softballs and not just like get right into it. But this one I feel is so important that it breeds kind of everything else that we're going to talk about.
Thank you. I appreciate you just intuitively taking us places. Yeah. You know, I want to comment on that and go into five. I've been thinking about it because what you said is so true. As an external recruiter, typically we are hired, obviously, to fulfill in a contract and help our client hire someone. And I find that most of my clients don't quite understand that they have got an intelligent ally who is in the middle of debriefs between both sides, as well as listens to yay or nay sort of responses from candidates when we're out there. So we actually are almost like a secret shopper, you know, and yes, there is so much that we really know. And I have offered myself for conversations to say, do you want to hear what's behind the curtain? And you know what, Tani? I would say maybe 1 out of 100 say yes. It's a lost opportunity. So everyone who's listening, here we go. All right.
No, I mean, this is so important, especially at a time in which 2 years ago, I think people were saying, everyone just wants to work for us. Like we've got a field of potential candidates. That's not our problem. And it is the problem again now. Now, you know, we're looking for the right candidates in the right roles. This is not just a warm body process anymore.
Absolutely. And I think, you know, it's really just so much always been that way. You know, when I'm talking to potential candidates regarding a high name organization. So I work for the last 20 years with hospital systems, which are nationally acclaimed. And so I'll bring up their name, and usually even just that name is enough to maybe want someone to walk over the line. But I hear from people, oh no, I'll never interview with them again. And it can be the slightest a show of disrespect. Treating somebody as human capital. And that's an interesting term because I know it's used quite often, and I understand where it comes from. But language is so, so very important for the way that we shape and understand humans that cross the threshold to talk to us and to take that chance. What's happening with candidates the night before an interview is that they have in their mind, even if they're not conscious of it, this is where mindful interviewing comes in, and then we're going to go to the five here, but they have in their mind that they're not good enough, that this will be another rejection, or that this will be somebody that's going to intimidate them or, you know, embarrass them in some way, or they might embarrass themselves. So as part of mindful interviewing, which I think I'll weave into these five, you know, just so you can kind of hear on the client side what they can do, but what's happening on the candidate side is that I help strengthen them by asking them and suggesting the night before that they say two mantras. Positive mantras to quiet the ego and to invite heart resilience. And that's where the heart mindfulness comes in, because it's through the heart that we can actively, deeply listen, that we can care about what somebody's asking us or sharing, that we can power attraction. We can also touch into intuition, and we can feel a sense like, ooh, I'm leaning in. This is really for me. You know, this is something that I want to go ahead and endure, you know, potentially six interviews or whatever process, even fly across the country for. So this moment, the night before, this idea of the now going to the interviewer side, if they see someone as human potential and not human capital, now they're going to come in. I'm going to give my number one of my five, which is the power dynamic. Shift it from treating somebody as capital and somebody that should feel really lucky to be talking with you, to more of an equal conscious relationship. That is, I need someone really motivated, special, aligned with my values that will make a difference and actually help bolster our team and bring a sense of emotional and social safety to everyone that they come by, whether that be client or customer or, you know, employee. And so if you enter with a power dynamic that's an equal kind of feeling, then you have a conscious welcoming and gratitude, and you move forward without intimidation. And so now with that, both sides are saying, okay, I want to help you know me. And there's a third almost being or energy in the room, which is this meant to be? Is this a match? And now everybody can play with that dynamic rather than try to force something one way or another. Because I would imagine that your listeners, especially if they're on the hiring side generally, they don't want to hire somebody who play acted and kind of pretended to, you know, showed up maybe as what they expected that person would need. And then they come in and they're really not prepared now to act that out or to bring that. And suddenly there's a discomfort and everybody is just separate and kind of fragmented. So that's number one. How does that sound? What do you think?
I mean, it's interesting because I think so many times in which there is a successful hire, one of the things you consistently hear from not just management team members who are a part of the interview process, but peers, is this idea or concept that, like, you are going to integrate so well with this team, right? That it maybe isn't so much about where someone went to school and what their past experiences were and what programs they can operate or, you know, those type of things. But it's much more of how they're going to interweave with the organization. And to hear somebody say, I think, oh my gosh, like the team is going to love you. You are just going to fit in so well with the dynamics that we already have in place. And it's interesting because I think a lot of times people wouldn't see that as changing the power dynamic, because in part, I think oftentimes people don't realize, especially people in power, oftentimes don't realize the power that they hold. And I think societally, it's something that we as a country, a nation, you know, and not just the United States, but yeah, everyone sees that there's this power issue that most of us fail to acknowledge or recognize. So I love this idea of mindfully recognizing that power dynamic.
Yeah. And you, if you think of somebody as human potential and not human capital, you even shift your mind right there. Something that Cleveland Clinic, using language, years and years ago, they brought in a new CHRO because they were not receiving their money back from Medicare, which is after Obamacare was tied to satisfaction ratings of your patients as well as your employees. So the CEO hired a new CHRO and said, help us, help us. And the CHRO was trained in servant leadership. And off the bat, he did some review and he found that those who had the highest satisfaction ratings among patients were the valets because they remembered Mrs. Smith. And they said, it's so good to see you moving, seeing you get into the car. When I came, I know you were nervous, but it's good to see you, Mrs. Smith. And that was more than they got from their surgeons, who actually are now significantly impacting their life in a very positive way. They should be getting some pretty high satisfaction ratings on that, you know,
exactly.
But it was emotional. It was emotional. And so the CHRO said to the CEO, here is where we're going to start. Everyone's going to be now called a career, or they're going to be called a caregiver. Sounds like career. Caregiver, a caregiver. And at first, those that were in the power position said, no, that would equalize us. And the CEO said, no, we're going to do that, you know? And so they went out forward and did it. And it was an immediate impact on every single lever. So the words, so human potential instead of human capital. So that sort of fits with number one.
We spend a ton of time on number one, and like in a very good way. Yes. It is time though. We got to take a really quick break.
Okay.
You're listening to the HR Power Hour on News Talk WLOV 100.5 FM and WLOVradio.com. We'll be right back.
At over 150 years old, Verrill has an illustrious history with more than seven generations of legal expertise. With more than 130 attorneys across seven offices from Maine to Washington, D.C., Verrill serves clients across the country and around the world. HR professionals, business leaders, and in-house counsel count on Verrill as one of the premier labor and employment law practices in the Northeast. Contact Verrill at verrill-law.com. That's verrill-law.com.
As the list of compliance challenges for businesses continues to grow, it's time to think about your payroll vendor as someone that can do more than just pay your employees. I'm Chris Clef, president of Paper Trails. We're a team of fun and local experts purveying convenient, high-tech payroll and compliance services across New England. Whether your business is struggling to stay compliant with an earned paid leave law, you're worrying about retirement savings programs, or you have questions about your state's paid family medical leave, Paper Trails has the team and tools necessary to allow you to handle the work while we handle the paperwork. To learn more about Paper Trails and how we can help your business, visit papertrails.com/HR Power Hour.
And we're back, and you're listening to the HR Power Hour presented by CMAcareer.com and Verrill-law.com. I'm your host, Tawny Alvarez, and today our guest is Lori Wallace, founder and CEO of Career Ecology, as well as a social innovator who's working to liberate heart mindfulness within the challenging and often traumatizing job hunt. And today we're talking about mindful interviewing. If you were with us before the break, you heard my question. I gave a doozy right to begin with, asking Lori to provide me with what she thought, you know, five of the top things that interviewers need to know and understand in order to find a successful candidate in a mindful way. And her first recommendation was to recognize the power dynamic and things that we can do to decrease or equalize that relationship. Lori, I'm excited to hear what your second recommendation is and what that would look like.
Thank you so much, Tawny. Yes, this is such good territory. On the heels of that, the next one I would say is be imaginative. I'm going to give an example. We want people to open up and share deeply what their gifts or genius and imagination and capacity to create and bring their wholeness, their fabulousness to any job. We don't want somebody to show up as someone who is frightened, who is so careful that they only bring, you know, a fifth of their potential. So there is a way to actually open up a conversation in the interview and set the tone for imagination and creation. And so a particular question, for example, would be, How have you mastered your work and skill? And how do you stay curious and innovative in your life? Now, that you can imagine that candidate is going to be surprised a little bit, because that is
very
fun.
Surprised. Even if people could see my face right now, they would see that my eyes raised and I was like, holy cow, I don't know. If I was asked that question, I feel like I would be a deer in headlights, just like, well, I was not expecting that. Like, do we want to go back to what's my biggest challenge in the workforce or what's my greatest weakness or strength? But not this one. But I don't mean to interrupt, Lori. You keep going on this one, because I mean, I just wish listeners could see my face to see like, that's a doozy. Yeah.
I would imagine, and this is how I actually prep people. Again, I keep popping back to mindful interview prep. So with a candidate, I'm prepping them to say, interviewing is not a performance. Interviewing is a service. So as you hear a question, lean in, and no matter what it is, you have to have this mindset or this kind of reaction of, let's go there. Or let's say it could even be a question that actually feels hot or odd. It could be someone's funny tone of voice that normally, if the ego was in the driver's seat here, it would begin the process of disconnecting and judging. And it could really ruin the rest of the interview. But even when you interview from a place of service and not performance, even somebody's funny tone of voice, even if they don't mean to have that tone of voice, or maybe they do, you still lean in like, ooh, that sounds painful, or that feels hot, you know, I'm going to help. So in this one, I could almost imagine, of course, nobody can see my face right now, but what I'm doing is I'm going, oh, and I'm touching my chin. Let me see. Because, you know, it's an invitation now to get imaginative. So in this kind of interview style, and I haven't listed as one of my five, because there's probably more like 20 wonderful things. But what would be happening here is this host, the interviewer, would have started off to say, this is going to be a great half hour. Let's say this is the first one, but half hour, we're going to ask a few questions just to get to know each other. This is going to be fun. We're going to explore. So, you know, feel free to take your time, think through, and I'll share as well. So then the person will kind of shift their mind set, you know, maybe realizing that this isn't going to be a list that is, you know, too, like you were saying before, just kind of, you know, down the list. Sometimes those interviews that are very specific down the list, HR approved, are really essential. And I also do prep my candidates. If you are getting if you're receiving questions and you can tell it's down a prescribed list, honor that. That's necessary. And they need to have that. And that means that they're treating you with respect, because everyone's getting those questions. So there's this lack of judgment that we want on all sides to just share. But you can get people more imaginative. You know, have you mastered your work and skill? You know, and people are like, oh, well, I've got 3 certifications, or, you know, I'm still trying to get another one. And I stay curious because I listen to this really cool HR podcast, HR Power Hour. Yeah. You know, you could even say, do you listen to podcasts? Do you read books? Is it movies for you? Walks in nature? You know, what is it that keeps you learning and growing and expansive in your mindset?
It's so interesting, because like, if I go back through my interview history, right? And I think of moments and interviews that were life-changing that I walked out of, you know, very disappointed in my performance, because I think we're, before anyone listens to this show, they or have, you know, worked with Lori, they likely are basing, okay, this is what you do in an interview, because this is what they told me in high school or in college, or, I did this program and this said, like, make sure that your suit is pressed and make sure that you've lint rolled yourself. And like, yes, you might be a hot mess most days, but do not come in as the hot mess that you are. And then taking that with the concepts of uncovering and being an authentic self sometimes is very difficult. But I think to this very important interview I had, and the interviewer said, what are some of the things that you like to do in your free time? And at that point in time in my life, I had very limited free time. And I said, I like to read. I don't get to do it as much, but I really enjoy reading. And he goes, oh, what are some books that you enjoy? And I sat there and I just stared at him. I was at a complete loss of any book. I couldn't think of a title. I couldn't think of an author. And of course, I walked out of the interview and immediately was like, that book by Carol Goodman, The Drowning Tree. You know what I mean? I immediately was able to think of the book I had just read, how much I loved it so much. But in that interview, I was just like, let me tell you what it's about. And was able to connect in that way, and ultimately did get a job that I walked away from thinking, that was horrible. You look like it. You look like you don't have any of the mental capacity that you honestly do have. But I think it did go. And I later found out that it was that authenticity, kind of more generally. I mean, another similar story, and this one is so timely, and I'm going to share it publicly. I never have. David, if anyone who listens to us regularly knows David is my wonderful and amazing co-host. The first time David and I met in person was an in-person meeting, and I had just finished eating lunch and I was running behind, and I ran to the meeting and I greeted him. We had this nice 1 hour meeting, just talking about what we do, what we enjoy, that kind of stuff like that. I said goodbye. I was like, oh, that went great. And I go to the ladies' room and I look in the mirror, and I have dozens and dozens of mustard seeds stuck between my teeth because I had just eaten a dressing that had all these mustard seeds. And I was like, the fact that that man did not say anything during this whole conversation, when there's just so many mustard seeds just like pouring out of me. But it ends up being this wonderful foundation of not just a partnership, but a friendship and all these other things. But it goes to one's authentic self and kind of being and sharing deeply and having that connection more generally. So I know I've taken us like somewhere completely different about mustard seeds and my teeth and stuff, but it's interesting because when you say it, I've never thought about it in that way, but that's exactly what happened. Is there was a very deep connection kind of initially that leads to decades long, you know, of partnership and friendship and all those things. And I don't mean to stop on that one, but I feel like if we could go on for like number two for the rest of the episode, but let's move to number three. What would be the third kind of element or thing that you kind of look at that it's important for interviewers to recognize in order to find the successful candidate?
Another one is number three is about, you know, sharing your own backstory for a moment. So, you know, I have a client one time from a very significant hospital system who was having a very hard time hiring. And now this particular hiring manager is fantastic. She will go the extra mile for you. She will work, she'll work so hard as a leader that you will be developed as if you've had, you know, three master's degrees working for her, and she cares. So she's wonderful, but she's deeply, deeply introverted to the extent that she just asks the questions. And the questions that she asks are tough ones. They're very clinically oriented. They're test oriented. And people find themselves extremely intimidated by the questions anyways. And then when they have somebody that doesn't respond or offer anything up. And so I learned a couple of decades ago when this wonderful person called me and said, Lori, do people like me? And she said,
that's such a hard thing to be able to one, put out to someone else, and to two, recognize, like, should I be asking this question? So first, even before you tell me what the answer is, kudos to her for acknowledging and making that statement.
Huge kudos. And she was so honest. She and I really respect each other, and we're on opposite ends of the temperament scale. And she said, Lori, I'm not like you. I don't use emojis and exclamation points. And I said, you know, I could probably use a few less of those. So I said, you know, and I said, yes, I said, here's the deal. People who know you and work with you do respect and like you. Here's what's happening, though. They are intimidated. You have a very strong reputation within an organization that is nationally acclaimed. So even though you are not just through your expression or your communication style and the little flurries, signaling safety, this is what this is, signaling safety. You can signal safety by simply sharing your story. And this particular person had grown up through this organization, and what had happened with her was really astounding. And I said, so when you start, you can say, well, you know, after the welcomes and there's a little bit of, you know, here's what we're going to do. But before we get started and before I dive in and get to know you, and I'm so looking forward to that, I thought I'd share with you a little bit about how I made my way here and actually how I've even grown and how the organization has taken my career in hand and developed me and how much I love being here. So I started at da, da, da. And so once you do that, now there's this exchange, you know, of information. There's a sense of story. She can say it with a very quiet, very sincere tone of voice. And it doesn't even have to be a ton of information, but that signals safety. It says, I am not going to hold this impenetrable bubble or boundary so that you have no clue if I'm about to bite you. Like, I'm actually going to let you in on me a little bit there. And some might say, oh, isn't that vulnerable, or is that changing the power dynamic? But that goes back to number one.
And I was just going to say the same thing. I mean, I think a lot of people say to themselves, it's an interview. Why would I talk about myself? The only purpose is for me to find out about them and why they would be good for the position. And to take some of that time to help people understand where you're coming from, your experiences with the organization really does, you know, shift that power dynamic in the way that you discussed. And it doesn't, I mean, I would recommend to people, probably you're not spending 2/3 of the interview on you, that you figure out your kind of quicker, I don't want to call it elevator back story, but something that you can, you know, and I would presume sometimes, and we talk about this a lot, and it's different. And I hope I'm not stealing number 4 or 5 kind of from mindful interviewing, but, you know, the importance of recognizing from a bias perspective, when you go into an interview, did you just get off a phone call in which you were screaming at someone or someone was screaming at you? How did you enter that situation and what were you carrying? And in my mind, by sharing your own story, in a lot of ways, it's almost like dropping that. I feel like it's easier than to let go of that baggage and to really hear kind of what the person across the table from you is saying or what they're looking for.
Yeah. I mean, you're talking about that signaling safety again, and we want to know, here's the thing is, as an interviewer and as the candidate, we want to know what's real and true because we want people to make sound choices. So truly by opening that up and saying, you know, here's where I, and even in that little description is, here's where I fall in the matrix. Here's how I got here. Oh, I've been here 6 months. Oh, I've been here 10 years, 20 years, you know, and people are like, oh, now they have some context and they can settle in. And then they're spending most of the time opening up and sharing about their personal selves, where when they ask questions, they're asking questions mostly about the organization. So, you know, it is really, really kind. So that helps. So that's number three.
So let's do number 4, and we're going to have to, this is going to be almost like a cliffhanger, because I'm going to ask you to give us a tidbit of what 4 is, and then I'm going to have to jump to a commercial. So let's do the tidbit, leave everyone hanging, and then return after a commercial break.
The tidbit that's going to surprise you is that thank you notes are not only for candidates.
Well, I will agree with you that I was not expecting that to be number 4. So stay tuned. It is time for us to take a quick break. You're listening to the HR Power Hour presented by CMAcareer.com and Verrill-Law.com on News Talk WLOB 100.5 FM and WLOBRadio.com. We'll be right back.
Educational HR Radio is critical to your organization's success, and our sponsors understand the value this program brings to owners, C-suite professionals, and the HR community. We are honored to thank our sponsors for their support and contributions to this program. We thank the law firms of Verrill, Jackson Lewis, and Sheehan Finney, along with our partners, Paper Trails and Strategic HR. Want to be the next sponsor of the HR Power Hour? Text 603-303-6124 and say HR Power Hour sponsor.
It's 6:42 p.m. Time for Steve Plato and his son Dylan to do the dishes. They talk about everything from the yuckiness of girls to the awesomeness of his soccer team. Sometimes they don't talk at all. Then, hey! The dreaded splash fight. It's dad o'clock, and it's the best time of the day. Because the smallest moments can have the biggest impact on a child's life. Take time to be a dad today. Call 877-4DAD-411 or visit fatherhood.gov. Brought to you by the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services and the Ad Council.
Founded in 1958, Jackson Lewis is a national law firm with a local presence. The firm's 765 attorneys practicing in 54 locations throughout the U.S. and Puerto Rico provide a wide range of resources to address every aspect of the employer-employee relationship. HR professionals, business and in-house counsels, and C-suite professionals count on Jackson Lewis as it has one of the most active employee litigation practices in the United States. Contact them today at jacksonlewis.com. That's jacksonlewis.com.
And we're back, and you're listening to the HR Power Hour, presented by CMAcareer.com and Verrill-Law.com. I'm your host, Tani Alvarez, and today our guest is Lori Wallace, founder and CEO of Career Ecology, as well as social innovator working to liberate heart mindfulness with the challenging and often traumatizing job hunt. And today we're talking about mindful interviewing. Right before the break, Lori gave us her fourth element of kind of what interviewers should be focusing in on and ways in which they can practice mindful interviewing. And before the break, she gave us number four, which was thank you notes are not just for the interviewee. So expand on that, Lori, because I said before the break that that wasn't what I was expecting. So now tell me more.
Absolutely. And first, I want to say, too, and acknowledge that thank you notes, there's something all over LinkedIn right now where people are, the Gen Z is trying to say they're not necessary. And I'm out there, you know, kindly refuting that. I said they are absolutely part of developing a relationship and showing interest, you know, kind of maybe closing on a concept or adding to it or maybe even correcting something. It's just so important for candidates to do that. I also do tell my candidates on the candidate side, and we'll talk about the client side now, but in a moment. But when I guide my candidates on how to do that, I guide them from a mindful interviewing perspective. I call it the chunky peanut butter and jelly thank you note.
Okay. So I see the bread, but I want to hear all about the chunky peanut butter and jelly.
There you go. So you can imagine, yeah, the bread is just, hi, thank you so much for interviewing me. I really enjoyed my time. One piece of white bread. The other piece is, I'm interested. And if you have any questions, please call me. So ridiculous calories, useless calories. They have nothing to do with anything.
But the peanut butter and jelly would not be good wrapped in lettuce either. So while I think there's ways around, you know, getting rid of the bread, that's one sandwich that I do think the bread is going to be important for. But that's divergent.
You're right. So we still start with that piece of bread there, you know, and then the middle is the chunky. And the middle is, you know, based on our conversation, I heard you emphasize. And then you go in and say, and that just really attracted me even further to the role because A, B, C. And there's just a moment to say, I was listening and I heard you. I have had multiple candidates actually turn around a no to a maybe, and, you know, coming forward in the interview process because they even corrected something. You asked me this question and I gave this answer. And as soon as I left, I realized this was the true, or this was the piece. This is what I want you to know about that. And the interviewer went, well, that there you go. And they were really impressed because they said, oh, here's somebody that actually thinks and corrects if they need to. So that showed.
I mean, there's that element, and I didn't even think of that initially, but I absolutely love that somebody, because you've just shown that character trait that you're willing to evolve, right? And that you're willing to pivot when you realize. But the other part of it is there's aspects of the interview process that for certain individuals, right, depending on how your mind works, depending on how well you do in social situations, all of those things that even with mindfulness training, I think are difficult. Some people are just better in writing than they're ever going to be verbally. And you're now giving yourself the opportunity to really highlight, here's where my skills really lie. I understand that when you asked me that question, I said, four times, I hesitated, I went back and forth, but like, look at this very thoughtful, written discussion that I can have on this topic. And I'm not saying like, here's War and Peace on your question, yes. Here's a 7-page, but I love the chunky aspect of like really kind of getting to something that was discussed.
Absolutely. It is so nourishing on all sides. And of course, I do say, you know, I do counsel the candidates, you'll send this and please do not expect a response. And I said, and that's, you know, very much from an HR mindfulness perspective, we could say, because we just don't want to, you know, the organization doesn't want to send wrong expectations or to give favoritism to one person over another. Equity, fairness is really important and it's important to you. So I set that expectation. They say, I won't have any expectation. I said, but do it. Because it is still really reflective of you and it feeds the situation, you know, it feeds the opportunity. So then let's go to the client side. Now, the client side doesn't send any sort of notes. Of course, that generally they don't do that. Although I have a couple clients that do, and I'm going to explain. You know, what we can see is that through the application tracking system, a candidate can go in there and find out where they are in the process, which is better than it used to be, because that does help with anxiety. This is what we're really dealing with, right? The anxiety. Now back to Cleveland Clinic. They, you know, they're really innovative in this space. Ever since they did the caregiver move, it has so lit up the soul of that culture that they continually look on new ways, especially since they're, you know, they're international organization. They have a hospital in Dubai, I believe. So, you know, they're always in between cultures and you're really trying to signal safety. Emotional and social safety is so critical so people can collaborate. And so what they do now is they do have a generic letter, but they send it out to say something to the effect of, you know, just in these, not the words of the letter, but basically, we acknowledge that you came. That was a that was a gift of your time. You shared your background. You know, we invited you because we were impressed with what you've done and you shared with us and we're grateful, you know, I mean, you know, more. We're kind of oriented, but and we are going to go ahead and continue with this process. But we certainly want to take this moment to offer our thanks for that. You can go into the website to follow and track from there. And we hope you have a beautiful day.
No, and I love that too. Like that acknowledgement of like you spent time with us too, and that time has us. Your time has the same value as our time, and we are both, you know, in the process for that same period. And I really love that acknowledgement as well. That person could have spent time with family or could, you know, could have done any of the other things they're passionate about, but instead came in to talk about this opportunity and whether or not you all would be a good match.
Absolutely. And, you know, once that person gets a note like that, when they have some sort of responsiveness to that extent and they're not chosen, let's say, they will apply next time again. They will tell their friends, oh, and I'll just say it just like this. Oh, they're nice. This is what candidates say. They're nice. Or they're not nice. I mean, and that is a really basic, almost childlike debrief.
And nice means so many, like, what does nice mean? It likely means something different to different people. But when you hear it about an employer, I think it says, is this a place I want to work or not? I don't recall ever hearing someone being like, oh yeah, they're not nice and I just can't wait to work for them. I mean, it's just that there's a disconnect between those two concepts.
Yeah. It's this idea of, you know, this place again is safe. We have to remember that our nervous systems are evolving much slowly or much more slowly than technology is, or, you know, where we're going in the world. Our nervous systems are still, and our brains are still designed to pick out in a crowd who's there to hurt us. So that what it takes to rise above that so we can actually not, you know, go with a bias or, you know, be fear-based or just let anxiety rule is that we have to allow, and this is kind of Buddhism and some other things, we have to allow these feelings to come up because they're attached to our animal selves for survival. But then we have to step and be the observer and say, oh, it's interesting. I feel that way. But what is this? What's the value of this? Or what am I here to learn? Or how does this, what does this mean? And that's how we keep evolving. And so we look for those that are holding the front door to an organization to have that mindset to understand, am I triggering actually primal fear and defensiveness? Or am I signaling safety? So I have somebody extraordinary and I get to know them in that hour.
Now, Lori, I mean, one of the things that we mentioned, you know, is that anxiety after the interview about like, ooh, how did it go? Kind of, I mean, one of the things that I feel like at least in the last decade, and maybe I'm showing my age, but is this an email? Is it an email communication between the two of them? Or is there value in a handwritten note? Or what do you see as either being more valuable versus the way that a lot of companies and people work, which is very fast paced expectations of yesterday and not in 3 days?
Yes, thank you. First of all, I suggest that candidates wait a day or two before they send their note, because I said, please think about what you learned. Let this be a meaningful note. If it's sent immediately, then you're just, you know, pushing your way through and not necessarily thinking it through. But on the other side, it can be immediate from the client saying, you were here and we valued that. And we wanted you to know as soon as possible. But to your question, I do suggest on the candidate side and the client side that it's all email. And that, you know, for the candidate side, they don't always have the email address of the hiring manager. And I guide them not to trespass on that. I say, you know, that is a gift, an invitation when somebody does give their business email out. So whoever is the one that is coordinating that interview, you can send it to them with an appreciation that they forward that along. You won't know 100% it gets through. I understand that. But that's the way to do that, because otherwise somebody can feel, ooh, this is a little too direct, because, and it's also overstepping a colleague who's part of this process. But generally email, yeah, the cards are just too, yeah, they're too slow and
no,
handwritten.
I certainly appreciate that. No, all very good and interesting yeah. information. Unfortunately, we're at that time again. We're going to have to take a quick break. You're listening to the HR Power Hour on News Talk WLOB 100.5 FM and WLOBradio.com. We'll be right back.
Founded in 1958, Jackson Lewis is a national law firm with a local presence. The firm's 765 attorneys practicing in 54 locations throughout the U.S. and Puerto Rico provide a wide range of resources to address every aspect of the employer-employee relationship. HR professionals, business and in-house counsels, and C-suite professionals count on Jackson Lewis, as it has one of the most active employee litigation practices in the United States. Contact them today at jacksonlewis.com. That's jacksonlewis.com.
As the list of compliance challenges for businesses continues to grow, it's time to think about your payroll vendor as someone that can do more than just pay your employees. I'm Chris Clef, president of Paper Trails. We're a team of fun and local experts purveying convenient, high-tech payroll and compliance services across New England. Whether your business is struggling to stay compliant with an earned paid leave law, you're worrying about retirement savings programs, or you have questions about your state's paid family medical leave, Paper Trails has the team and tools necessary to allow you to handle the work while we handle the paperwork. To learn more about Paper Trails and how we can help your business, visit papertrails.com/HR Power.
In today's highly regulated climate, customized HR solutions are needed more than ever. Career Management Associates can partner with your existing HR department for projects or even serve as your outsourced HR team. From compliance and compensation to investigations and employer relations, CMA provides you trusted HR solutions. Call 207-780-1125 or visit cmacareer.com.
And we're back, and you're listening to the HR Power Hour presented by CMAcareer.com and Verrill-Law.com. I'm your host, Tani Alvarez, and today our guest is Lori Wallace, founder and CEO of Career Ecology and social innovator working to liberate heart mindfulness within the challenging and often traumatizing job hunt. And today we've been talking about mindful interviewing. Before the break, we were talking about the importance of employers sending thank you notes after interviews. And it really tied into all the other things we've been talking about today concerning shifting of power dynamics so there's a more equal relationship, the interviewer sharing their backstory, being imaginative and sharing deeply. Lori, that brings us to our fifth kind of recommendation or tip that you would provide to interviewers. What would that fifth tip be?
So this is, I'm going to top this off because you're probably thinking, huh, we're already at the thank you note. The interview's over. And I thought that I would include something in that mindfulness context. I want to talk about for just ever so briefly about impermanence. And we're in a place right now where there are layoffs. There have been shape-shifting of organizations because of COVID. There's so much change in how organizations are working, AI making a huge change in this area. And so there is a way that hiring organizations can think about the front door and the back door. And so I just wanted to drop that into this conversation. When we talk about mindfulness, is that people who come, they come for a while. And so they may come while that works for them and their family and it works for their career. And then they may transition out within 3 years or two, or they may stay longer. You as an organization might realize, oh, you know, we didn't get that FDA approval. So we're going to have to let go of 80 people who were lined up under this product. So as you bring people in and onboard, there is something I'd like to suggest that hiring organizations consider. How do we create a language and an experience of impermanence, but more like we are going to empower, we are about empowerment. So as you come in, know that you have got solid leadership that are always looking for ways to keep the organization solid, making responsible relationships for everyone we are responsible to, which is you, our employees, our communities, our environment, our constituents, you know, our shareholders. And that should we move to change, we're going to be ready for that. And you're going to be empowered with that. And in fact, that's going to be a regular part of how we support you in your development, is understanding shape-shifting, why it's important for our business, our products, our clients. And so that means when it's time potentially for that person you've hired, and if it is an outplacement moment, I have another word change. I would like to, rather than call it outplacement, I'd like to call it empowerment. It's a time that it does mean, and this goes right back to what you said at the beginning, Tani, is that sometimes things look like they're a crisis, that they look like bad news, but it's just a change. It's just a shift, an evolutionary shift that can, it's an opening to something really extraordinary in your experience, in your growth. As ill as I became, every single sector in my life shut down when I was 36. And I am here with you now, several decades later, doing the work I dreamt of doing. I am practicing that radical kindness. And I am on the heels now of making a difference across schools, corporations, anyone that will listen, to try to bring them into a place of safety, emotional, social, and to bring their gifts forward. So we get to look at it differently, and we can look at it like nature. So here in this indoor outdoor, let's hold that space of shift as a good, positive thing that brings change and empowerment in the world.
I mean, it's so interesting too, because I feel like when empathy really entered into kind of HR discussions, a lot of people felt as though the only way to engage empathetically was to use family-based language, like we're family here. Mm-hmm. And that's directly contrary to what often happens, because you don't fire family members. You don't have to lay off family members. Yes. And it just, in that moment, creates so much more angst, because you've almost deceived the individuals for a long time that there is permanence here, that you would never do anything to get rid of them. And I think that this concept of impermanence is so very important. And, you know, between that, between kind of how you've woven it in with all the other aspects of what this process looks like, I mean, it's been a wonderful discussion, and I am shocked how fast the last hour has gone by. But Lori, thank you so very much for all of your time today. I really appreciated it. I learned a ton, and I always say that the best shows are ones in which, you know, the listeners and I are learning at the same time. So thank you again for being a guest today. I appreciate it.
Deeply, deeply grateful. And just thank you so much for your open and curious heart and mind. You're making such a difference. We don't know who by chance is going to hear this, but we know that they were meant to hear this. So thank you for holding the space.
Thanks, Lori. For everyone, you've been listening to the HR Power Hour on News Talk WLOB 100.5 FM and WLOBradio.com. Thanks for listening, and we'll see you next week.
Thank you, everyone, for listening, and catch us every week at 10 a.m. on News Talk WLOB 100.5 FM or 1310 a.m. and streaming live at WLOBradio.com. Podcasts of this show and every show are available at HRPowerHour.com. Have a great week, everyone, and remember, HR management is critical to your business's success.